until he was sure the area was clear, then he would have jumped his ship in to ping Skippy. If we had lost Valkyrie in the clouds of the gas giant, the escape pod would automatically take Skippy up into orbit to wait for eventual rescue. Maybe some of the crew could have boarded escape pods also. That was not really a priority for us. If the situation was so bad that we needed to eject Skippy's pod, the odds were no humans were getting out of there alive. Plus, we couldn't risk an enemy capturing a pod and finding humans huddled in there. Skippy's pod was modified so that if it was about to be captured, it would self-destruct, and Skippy would float away with the rest of the debris. If that ever happened, SOP was for the Dutchman to wait in stealth for 10 days to make sure the area was clear, then jump in to search for the beer can. Anyway, fortunately, Chang hadn't needed to do anything. I did feel bad for him and everyone else aboard his ship, including Nagatha. They had all waited and worried for over a week after we jumped away from the battle. Nagatha had painstakingly analyzed the sensor data and determined Valkyrie had somehow managed a very chaotic and short jump, but then we didn't appear anywhere they could detect. Nagatha had gotten into a loop of analyzing the limited data, making guesses about what could have happened, dismissing her theories, and starting over. It wasn't healthy, and Chang had been worried about her. She was pissed at me for making her fear we had all been killed. No amount of apologies from me made her feel better until Chang and I swapped jobs and I came aboard the Dutchman for a few days while Skippy directed his bots to make repairs to Valkyrie. She calmed down by the second day. Part of her better mood was from having me aboard, but mostly she was happy that I confessed I could not see a way for us to continue the ghost ship attacks. When our break was over, I flew back to Valkyrie, and Chang returned to his own ship. Sims had stayed aboard Valkyrie. I had authorized a free exchange of crews, so her sweetie Frank Muller had flown over to our mighty battlecruiser, and my executive officer was in a pretty good mood most of the time. Her good mood was gone when she walked into my office holding a tablet. It was our regular morning meeting, and I hadn't expected anything unusual. Skippy was still working hard to get the ship fixed and upgraded, so we were just drifting in deep space. Exercises outside the ship were canceled until all repairs were completed. There was no flight training except in simulators, and the star team was keeping fit as best they could. Sims sat down, looked at the tablet in her hands, took a breath, and looked up at me.
"Sir, I went into Desai's cabin. It needed to be done," and she let out a breath. What she didn't say was that I should have taken care of that task. She flipped a tablet around so it faced me. "I've got most of her TA-50. Some of it... Oh, you've gotta be ki-"
"Seriously?" I exploded at her, and immediately regretted it. "Sorry."
"All property has to be accounted for. Those are the regs."
She gave me a shrug. She was right. Table of Allowances number 50 was a list of the gear assigned to a soldier, from body armor to canteens. You got whatever gear your unit thought you needed for the situation, and you signed a receipt. I think that one was Form DA-2062, something like that. When the Merry Band of Pirates was made an official unit of UNEF, someone somewhere decided we needed a governing organization that was more of a real bureaucracy than the thrown-together mishmash of the Expeditionary Force. When the X-Force left Earth the first time, each of the 5 major militaries involved kept their own organizations, gear, and rules. The Merry Band of Pirates was small and unified enough that we could use one set of rules, so the question was, whose set of rules? Rather than endlessly arguing over details, UNEF pressed the easy button and decided that since I was a U.S. Army officer, then U.S. Army regulations would be our basic rules for governance. They made me responsible for assuring compliance with a vast set of regs I didn't even know existed. So, during our current mission, I had dumped the whole mess in the lap of my executive officer. You might think that was not fair of me, but I really did it for the benefit of Sims. The extra work built character. Or it prepared her for a future command. Or some other good reason that I can't think of right now. All I know is someone needed to play Super Mario Kart, and Sims wasn't going to do it. Anyway, once we jumped away from Earth, I pretty much unofficially tossed the official rulebook in a drawer and forgot about most of it. Yes, I kept up the daily reports that both the Army and UNEF required, but we did not sweat irrelevant details like haircuts. The star team let their hair go shaggy and grew beards if they wanted. That had typically been a privilege of the green side special operators, on Earth and beyond. I extended the same lax rules to the blue side. We all got haircuts and shaved or trimmed beards as necessary before returning to Earth anyway, and I had more important shit to worry about. So when Sims mentioned that not all the items in Desai's gear listed in her TA-50 had been located, I was tempted to delete the damned form. That would have been a mistake. If we ever got back to Earth, I would need all the goodwill I could get, and pissing off the United States Army was not a way to get on their good side. Plus, someone somewhere would see that not all of Desai's issued gear had been accounted for and dock her pay for the difference. Like I said, the Army is my family. It is also a huge bureaucracy. Holding out a hand for her tablet, I hoped Sims knew I wasn't angry with her. Let me see the list, please. Is any of the missing gear stuff she might have had with her in the dropship? Possibly some of it. Shit. Whatever we can account for, if we get back to Earth. I looked up at her. When we get back to Earth, I'll sign for it. Damn it. We're going to have the same issue with everyone we lost, aren't we?
We have been a little lax with the rules, sir.
I am not going to tell people they need to lay their gear out for inspection now. Screw it. I slammed a fist on the table. None of this shit matters.
It's just us out here. What does matter?
Getting home. Saving whatever, whoever we can.
And what are we doing about that?
I knew what she was asking. We had been jumping our mighty Valkyrie around the galaxy on a campaign that was scaring the shit out of the Maxulks and was not doing a damn thing to save our home world. I hear you, XO. I don't know that there is anything we can do. If we run the blockade with Valkyrie at this point, we will only give the kiddies more reason to send more warships to Earth sooner. She reached across the desk, took back her tablet, and pointed at the list of gear that was missing.
I will handle this, sir.
What do you need me to do? Put on your thinking cap? Find a way to save Earth? Sims, come on. Give me a break. We both know that's impossible.
Sir, for the merry band of pirates, any situation is only impossible until you decide that it isn't.
Then we get to work. I will. I looked longingly at the drawer where my tablet was stored. No playing video games for me until I had thought up a way to save the freaking world again. Well, if you've seen my thinking cap lying around somewhere, let me know, okay? I can use all the help I can get. Hey, Skippy, I groaned as I took off my boots while sitting on the edge of the bed. The alien bed was still not fully trusted, but I was no longer sleeping on the floor. I did sleep in sweatpants, with a knife and Z-phone in the pockets. Hey, Joe, you sound tired.
It's been a long day, you know.
I do. It has not been easy for me, either. You joke about me being Mad Dr. Skippy, but I have to provide medical care for the crew. It's hard seeing people in pain.
That's true.
Sorry I joked about, unless they're assholes. In that case, screw 'em.
Oh, sure. He made me laugh.
Or, if I caused their pain.
In that case,
he giggled.
It can be funny.
Funny for me, I mean.
Yeah, I got that.
Unfortunately, this is no fun for anyone. Joe, it is hard seeing Margaret trying to learn how to control her body all over again.
She's doing much better. She was dancing, right? That must be good.
Suddenly, I feared maybe the progress I had seen might have been my own wishful thinking.
Is she better?
He sighed. She is. Joe, I could not have wished for a better patient. Margaret is usually determined and cheerful about her condition. She doesn't complain. She does exactly what I recommend she does. He broke off talking, and for a moment it sounded like he was sobbing. Damn it, he sniffled. I wish she would complain, or yell at me, or something. Does that make sense? I feel... His sigh was utterly miserable. Like a terrible person.
It does make sense, Skippy. And that doesn't make you a bad person, it just makes you normal. That's a good thing.
You are feeling frustrated and powerless. You want to do more to help her,
and your other patients. But you know better than anyone what is possible and what isn't. You're doing all you can. His avatar balled up its little fists and shook them in anguish and frustration. It's not enough, Joe. Skippy, this may be hard to hear, but there are limits to even your awesomeness. Her recovery is proceeding on schedule, right? Well, yes, better than I expected, actually. She had significant brain damage, Joe. Worse than I thought. Will she be herself again? Yes. Not exactly, you understand. She went through a terrible trauma. That would affect her even if her brain had not suffered injury. Fortunately, the damage affected her motor function and memories more than the parts of her brain that represent her personality and her sense of self. Acting casually, I asked a question that I feared. Her personality shouldn't change much? My casual attitude was betrayed by the squeak I added to the last word. She is certainly acting like the Margaret Adams we know. This morning she was consoling Smythe when he was discouraged about his own progress. She was consoling him? I could not imagine that. Come on, Joe, it's Margaret. I meant her kind of consoling. Oh. She bitch-slapped him for whining? You know it, he chuckled. She did say sir after she pointed out what a crybaby he was being about the therapy for his bionic legs. Ha! Okay, maybe she is going to be all right. Anyway, you called me? Yeah, I need your advice. I've decided that continuing the strategy of hit-and-run attacks are our best option while we still can. Technically, I had not decided anything. Continuing with that strategy was the choice by default because I couldn't think of anything better for us to do. Yes, and you know my objections to that plan. We will need to be careful, Joe. Valkyrie barely escaped from our last attack. I agree. A fateful, nearly disastrous 13th attack had been bad in several ways. It nearly destroyed our mighty ship. In the short term, it prevented us from causing any more havoc. Longer term, the Maxulks would now be even more determined to trap or destroy us. Having seen that our ghost ship was not invulnerable, they would be predators who sensed weakness in their prey. Before, captains of Maxult ships might have hesitated to engage in battle with us. Now, they had tasted blood. We would not be able to scare them. Don't worry, we will emphasize the run part of hit and run. Like you said, one ship can't cause significant damage, so what we will try to accomplish is to force the Maxulks to focus on defense and keep their attention on this mythical Boss Farrakh faction. You say you will be careful, but when we get into action, you will be tempted by targets of opportunity, and I will rely on your judgment to keep me from going off mission, Skippy. Also, Sims won't allow me to do any stupid shit. If you listen to her, Joe, you are nowhere as impulsive and reckless as Yunef believes, but sometimes you still act before you think. We will establish objectives before each attack. Call me out anytime you think I'm going off the rails, okay? You say that now, but when I try to talk some sense into you, I promise to be a better listener, okay? Hey, I want to thank you for, you know, bailing my ass out of a jam again. Mentally, I prepared for him to insult me. That was a small price to pay for not being dead. Oh, no problem, Joe. I was worried there for a while. It is such a relief. Hey, we were all worried, you know? He stared at me. Uncomprehending. What were you worried about? Blinking slowly, I stared at him. Survival? Barely escaping from the bad guys? Does any of this sound familiar to you? Maybe you should check the news feed in your... Oh, that! He waved a hand. You got us in another desperate situation because you didn't think ahead, blah, blah, blah. That's nothing new, Joe. Plus, in the end, you monkeys are all doomed anyway. I was talking about something really important. More important than all of us not dying and dooming our hope of bringing people from Earth to the Beta Site? Hey, if you were so concerned about that, maybe we shouldn't have jumped into a battle we didn't need to fight. Just saying, you know. I know. That's on me. It was my fault. Having beaten myself up about my stupidity, I didn't need him piling on. Or maybe I did. What is this really important thing that had you so concerned? The recent lack of opportunities to demonstrate my awesomeness, of course.
Joe, until I created a feedback loop on the enemy damping field, I hadn't done anything truly awesome since my chain of wormholes thing. I haven't done an awesome thing in, like, forever. My awesomeness game needs to be kept fresh, dude.
I blinked slowly at him. Skippy, every time you create a shortcut by altering wormhole connections, you remind us of your extreme awesomeness.
Well, sure, but people take that for granted now, he moped. I need to perform new and exciting awesomenesses.
Ah, there it was. I understood the problem. Skippy, despite claiming he did not care what filthy monkeys thought of him, craved praise. He especially needed praise from the merry band of pirates because he respected us. Or at least he disrespected us somewhat less than his level of disdain for every other being in the galaxy.
That's my fault, Skippy. You are so awesome, I never even think about all the stuff you do every day. Hey, like, I was feeling like crap, and now you have made my day.
That is not exactly awesome. He rolled his eyes. It is awesome to me.
Whatever.
He tilted his head and made a W of his thumbs and index fingers. My displays of awesomeness depend on you. Your monkey brain dreams up crazy crap for me to do, so keep it coming.
Actually, I mostly do new awesome stuff when your idiocy gets us into a desperate mess, so really, please keep doing short-sighted, stupid things, Joe.
How about I do smart things instead?
Oh, he snickered. Like that's gonna happen.
Yeah. Hey, Sims told me I have to think of a way to save Earth again, and I got nothing. Have you made any progress on unlocking your memories?
Not really.
He took off his ginormous admiral's hat and scratched his head. How will my memories save your homeworld?
Well, I was kinda hoping you would remember how to control sentinels. You know, make them squash the rotten kitties for us.
What?
Dude, seriously, that's your plan?
I told you I don't have a plan.
Huh. You can forget about me magically using sentinels as attack dogs. If they did wake up, they would probably wipe out Earth as their first target.
What? Why?
Because, numbskull, we know sentinels punish species for unauthorized use of elder technology.
We haven't used any.
I am elder technology, he reminded me. You monkeys got me to screw with the wormhole network. I broke an elder wormhole on your suggestion. You think sentinels will be happy about that?
Shit. I slumped back in my chair, then slid down halfway off the seat, totally defeated. That was my one last hope, Skippy. It wasn't a realistic hope, but it was the best I got.
Well, look on the bright side, Joe.
The bright side?
Sure. Now you can fantasize about a whole new unrealistic plan to save the world. That should buy you at least a couple weeks of blissful ignorance.
Tilting the chair back, I closed my eyes.
Can you go away while I wallow in misery?
I thought misery loves company.
Not today, Skippy. Not today.
Admiral Erkan was aboard his flagship when the shocking report reached him. His deputy of operations was there also, and shared the shock, the anger, and the sick feeling of impending doom.
A disaster,
Erkan said under his breath, as he tore his attention away from the message scrolling through his mind. At such times, he wished the Maxalts still relied on more primitive means of communication, such as visual display devices. If the report had arrived on a crude tablet or holographic interface, he could have tossed the tablet away or wiped the hologram out of existence. Instead, the file was queued up in his memory, and it was already there. It lurked in his consciousness whether he wanted to think about it or not.
2 heavy cruisers lost. 2 others damaged so badly they will not be capable of combat duty for 2 or 3 months. Both star carriers had to be self-destructed.
He counted the tally of destruction. Erkan himself had made the call to abandon the damaged star carriers and the last surviving destroyer. With the ghost ship still in fighting condition and possibly lurking in the area, it was too risky to send in salvage ships without heavy escorts. He could not spare heavy escorts. They were all needed elsewhere in the sector.
We threw 20 ships into the fight, and 4 came back undamaged. The worst part is the ghost ship taunted us when it jumped back to attack again.
Privately, Erkan thought the truly worst part was the captain of the taunted destroyer had needlessly caused the destruction of his ship, but the admiral kept that to himself.
This was my plan, and it was a complete disaster.
Subcommander Silas could not disagree with his admiral's statement. He disagreed anyway, because part of his job was to offer differing perspectives to the senior officer.
An unfortunate outcome, to be sure, but not a complete disaster. Your forces had the ghost ship surrounded and nearly destroyed it.
Bah! Erkan dismissed his aide's words, knowing them to be false comfort. None of his fellow admirals would see the stunning result of the battle as anything other than a pure disaster.
Nearly is not good enough. May I remind you that, for the first time, we have detailed data on the capabilities and characteristics of the ghost ship. It is not invincible. You have proven that. That ship is certainly damaged. And where can it go to get replacement components? We have determined that it is, or was, an extinction-class battlecruiser.
A heavily modified battlecruiser, Erkan noted sourly.
Nevertheless, it is based on one of our ships. Its performance is in most cases identical to a standard extinction class. It is not invincible, he repeated.
It does not have to be invincible. Erkan refused to be comforted.
The enemy demonstrated a new ability to disrupt our damping fields. Who knows what technology they have not yet revealed to us?
Admiral, we have analyzed the damping field issue.
True, that feedback technique is a new capability, Silas admitted. However, if the ghost ship tries to use feedback again, they will encounter a nasty surprise. We know how to retune our damping field generators to prevent them from being disrupted by feedback. That information is being distributed in emergency flash messages to all ships and stations.
He did not add what the technology division of Fleet Intelligence had told him, that Maxalt ships were not able to duplicate the feedback mechanism. The principle of the feedback technique was understood well enough. The problem was that even the incredible AIs of the Rindaloo could not process data and react fast enough to create their own feedback loop. Their AIs simply could not think fast enough, and the idea that the enemy had AIs more advanced was deeply troubling.
The taunting was unfortunate, yet I do see that action as recklessness by the enemy. They are becoming bold to the point of being foolish. Also, we know their ship was damaged in the battle. Their options for replenishment and repair have to be limited. We can run it to ground.
We have to find it first. Luring the ghost ship into an ambush didn't work.
I fear now that Fleet Headquarters will listen to Reichert's foolish plan to blockade wormholes. That will tie up a large portion of the fleet and accomplish little.
Silas, how could this have happened? We planned an ambush, and somehow the enemy hit us when we didn't expect an attack, before we were ready.
Clearly the enemy intercepted our communications, Silas said, as if it were not blindingly obvious. We were so careful. All orders were given verbally, in person. There were no messages to be intercepted.
Unless someone ignored your instructions. If some brainless idiot...
Admiral, forgive me for saying so, but I have learned that most mistakes come from someone who did not get the memo. It could be as simple as a junior supply officer sending a request for particular equipment because they were preparing for their ship's part in the ambush. My people are investigating. That is not my most serious concern.
It is not?
No. We can accept that the ghost ship might have captured intact quantum interchangers when they took the ship. That is not supposed to happen, just as battlecruisers are not supposed to be captured.
That problem is solving itself. We are replacing all interchangers tagged to battlecruisers. That process will soon be complete.
While headquarters did act promptly to replace interchangers throughout the fleet, battlecruisers are not the only vulnerability. We now know that some components of the ghost ship might have come from a heavy cruiser, so those interchangers also need to be replaced. There are many more heavy cruisers than battle cruisers,
Replacing all of them will be a major, sustained effort. That is also not my greatest concern.
No. What could be worse than our most secure communications method being compromised?
Worse is thinking we have resolved the problem when we have not.
Explain.
We know about the ghost ship. I fear what we do not know. Consider this, Admiral. The enemy has captured more than one of our heavy ships. We thought such a feat was impossible. Even the Rindaloo lack the ability to board and take one of our capital ships, and turn that ship against us. Whatever enemy we face, if they could take a capital ship, they could compromise one of our relay stations.
Erkan growled, low and menacing.
Silas, in ancient times, messengers who brought bad news could be killed, for they were considered tainted.
We all long for those simpler days, sir. Silas did not allow his flare of nervousness to show. My people have analyzed the attacks, and the message traffic the enemy must have accessed to know the location of the ships they attacked. If the ghost ship is getting information from relay stations, they must have compromised at least five of them.
Erkan let fly a string of curses so vile it had taken his people millennia to invent them.
You are fortunate, Silas, that I am presently unarmed.
I am grateful for that happy circumstance.
My oversight could be quickly undone.
There is some potential good news. In ancient times, what was the fate of messengers who brought positive tidings?
Erkan leaned back on his couch.
They could be showered with gifts, food, drink, the company of willing companions, other pleasurable enticements.
I seek only the joy of serving my admiral.
If that were true, then you would be a fool. I have no use for fools. What good news could come from such a disaster?
While we have been talking, my people have engaged the operations AIs to analyze the battle. They believe the ghost ship was surprised at encountering such a strong force. I agree with the analysis. Nothing else about the enemy's actions makes sense.
Sir, the ghost ship probably thought it was attacking only the small force you used as a lure. That is how they were nearly surrounded.
So, Erkan considered. Not a complete disaster, he reluctantly agreed. They hit us before we were prepared, where we did not expect to be hit. But they also expected only our decoy force, not to fly into our ambush.
Nothing else makes sense. Also, our AIs have analyzed the performance of the ghost ship. It is powerful. We have no explanation of how that ship could generate so much power, but its actions are slow and clumsy. The Bosphorak might have replaced the original AI.
That, Erkan growled, is impossible.
He knew how the substrate of AIs were woven into the ship's hulls. It would be easier to build a new ship than to tear out the AI and replace it.
It is more likely they have somehow compromised the ship's AI and are forcing it to work with them. A compromised AI could explain why the ghost ship's actions, its control of weapons, its maneuvering is so slow compared to the specifications of an extinction-class ship.
That, at least, is something we can use. Silas, I will not shoot you this time, nor will you be rewarded.
The aide bowed his head in exaggerated fashion.
To serve is my reward.
That drew the only laugh Admiral Erkan enjoyed on that fateful day. Chapter 17. A minor issue we had to deal with when splitting the crew between two ships was the exercise equipment. The Maxalts did not need to lift weights or run or do any other sweat-inducing nonsense to keep fit. Their genetic enhancements and the nanomachines embedded throughout their bodies kept them in peak physical condition. Apparently, they did need to practice to maintain eye-hand coordination, balance, and other links between their neural circuitry and the muscles, because we found equipment for different types of gymnastics, something like throwing darts, and other recreational gear. Also, they enjoyed playing sports. There was a court for a sport sort of like basketball, except the sides of the court curved upward, so players could sprint along the wall, and they must have bounced balls off the walls and even the ceiling to pass and make shots. Some of our star team tried playing the game with a regular basketball instead of the heavy ball used by the Maxulks. Kapoor put a stop to that game after one of his team, who shall remain anonymous, though her name rhymes with Katie Frey, ran halfway up a wall and came down to slam dunk a shot, slamming into Justin Grudzian and nearly spraining his shoulder. Personally, I was disappointed when Kapoor ordered the door to the court locked. As the commander, I understood we couldn't afford to lose any more people to injuries. As an idiot, I thought the game looked like a fun challenge and I wanted to play. Maybe later. Anyway, we were not so lucky with our unenhanced biological bodies. We needed to sweat and run and jump and lift and strain to keep our bodies fit. The small crew aboard the Flying Dutchman needed a gym for their own fitness and morale, so we left a bunch of the equipment there. To fit out a gym aboard Valkyrie, we transferred equipment by dropship, and Skippy had the ship's fabricators make additional gear. We could have had a wider variety of fitness options, but Skippy needed the fabricators to concentrate on making parts for the ship he had snapped together from Lego pieces. Anyway, I was on a rowing machine, which was one of my least favorite pieces of equipment in the gym. It was a great low-impact workout. I was always dripping with sweat, and my arms and legs felt like jelly after a rowing session, but I did not enjoy the experience. Maybe the problem was that unlike running, rowing was just an unnatural motion. While running, or even on an elliptical trainer or an exercise bike, your legs pumped up and down, and your muscle memory did most of the mental work. While running or biking, I was able to zone out and let my mind wander. I could listen to an audiobook and let the narrator's voice make me forget I was in a gym aboard an alien starship far from home. Sometimes my workout would be over, but I kept running or biking or whatever because the audiobook was in a suspenseful part of the story and I didn't want to stop yet. On a rower, I had to think too much. Sure, I had been doing it for long enough that I did not actually need to think much, just enough that I couldn't zone out. To get a smooth motion, I had to coordinate my legs from ankles to hips with my back and my arms. There is a rumor that more than once, I had not been paying attention while rowing and pulled back too far so the bar smacked me in the chin. That rumor is vicious and hurtful. Although it did not hurt as viciously as my bleeding lip that time I really smacked myself hard. So, I was concentrating on not embarrassing myself, when over the hip-hop music thumping out of the gym speakers, I heard a soft, high-pitched whistle. That sound indicated a routine announcement or alert would be made, and a moment later there was a single soft chime, like a bell. Without needing to look up the significance of the signal on my Z-phone, I knew the ship was about to make a minor course correction. Skippy had reprogrammed our new ship's alert system to use the same sounds as we had gotten used to aboard the Dutchman, and only the new people needed to check their phones or request more information from Skippy. And only a very new person would make the rookie mistake of bothering Skippy for information they should already know. Anyone directly affected would have received a direct call from Skippy or the bridge crew anyway, so the alerts were more of an FYI nature. And if we had people outside the ship, a course correction maneuver would be coordinated with them well in advance. Alerts prevented people from doing something stupid. Since stupid things aboard an immensely powerful alien warship could be catastrophic, it was best to let everyone know what was going on. Because Valkyrie was at the moment drifting in formation with the Flying Dutchman, I know the action was technically station-keeping rather than a course correction. The upgraded Dutchman was performing adjustments to her new normal space propulsion system, so most maneuvers to keep our ships in formation were being performed by our big battle cruiser. There was another single soft chime a minute later, indicating the maneuver was complete. I had not felt anything, which was perfectly normal. Only radical movements were felt at all by the crew. Basically, if the ship moved so violently that the artificial gravity system could not fully compensate, then feeling the ship move would be the last thing anyone needed to worry about. It was... I did feel movement. What the hell? I was about to shout for Skippy when I realized the ship was not moving. The stupid rowing machine was. Damn it,
I muttered under my breath, which was easier than talking because I was breathing so hard. The front of the machine had shifted while I used it. It had rocked side to side and sort of walked itself across the floor until it was now almost touching the treadmill beside it. Apparently, my rowing motion had been anything but smooth, and also apparently I had zoned out while rowing, because I had not noticed that my right elbow was close to smacking the treadmill. As an excuse to take a break from an exercise I hated, I stopped rowing, got off the seat, and lifted the front of the machine to put it back into position. There were no scuff marks on whatever super-tough material the floor was made of, just a faint residue left by the rubber pads on the bottom of the machine. Kneeling down, I rubbed fingertips along the floor. It felt smooth but not slippery, so the machine had not just skidded freely across the surface. My guess was when I pulled back on the rowing handle, I had lifted the front slightly, causing it to walk sideways. It was ironic that the course correction chime had sounded while I was rowing, because I had needed my own station-keeping maneuver to... Holy shit. Station-keeping. Halfway out the doorway, I remembered that I needed to wipe down the machine as a courtesy to the next person who wanted to use it. Our new temporary gym did not have towels, so we had a table with packages of baby wipes. In the field, especially in dry, dusty conditions, baby wipes can be a soldier's best friend. That is a trick I learned in Nigeria, which had a dry summer the time I was there. How do you clean dust and grit off goggles, night vision gear, camera lenses, and the lubricated parts of rifles? That's right, baby wipes. Another trick to keep grit out of a rifle barrel is to slide a condom over the muzzle. You could use a balloon, which is made of a tougher material, but balloons are not easy to find in the bush, while soldiers can always get condoms. I know, that is shocking, and I can assure people who have sons or daughters in the military that certainly does not apply to your precious Bobby or Susie. The rest of us, I am sorry to say, are a very bad influence, and we are very, very sorry. Okay, back to the real world. Quickly wiping my sweat off the machine, I then dashed out the doorway and ran on slightly shaky legs toward my office until my slow brain reminded me that was too public a forum for me to ask potentially stupid questions of Skippy. So I tried to halt my run in the middle of a passageway intersection and stumbled, staggering against a bulkhead corner. A pilot was walking down the side passageway, her mouth open in silent surprise as I pushed off the bulkhead and used the energy to propel me to the left, dodging in front of her and bouncing off a wall. "Parkour," I gasped, and picked up the pace, trying to make it seem like my clumsiness was intentional. I had done something like parkour for real, although the Army called it obstacle course running, and the only obstacle in that passageway was a pilot who had held up her hands and stepped to her left to stay out of her clumsy commander's way. Regardless, I reached my cabin with only a couple of bruises, and the door slid closed behind me automatically.
"Skippy!
Joe!" he responded. "Are we just shouting each other's names, or is there a point to this interruption of me doing something very important?"
"There is a point. Please, O greatest of all great ones, could you spare a tiny bit of your vast intellect to humor an ignorant monkey?"
"Depends. If you are going to argue with me again about the Cat in the Hat, I already told you."
"It's not about that, except that you're wrong, and..."
"Seriously, Joe, I wrote an 8,000-page brief to support my..."
"8,000 pages is a brief?"
"It is 24,000 pages if you include all the footnotes and references. If you like, I could send just the summary to you. That is only 1,200 pages.
"I would not like that," I said in a panic.
If he sent me the summary, he would expect me to read every damned page, and my life would become a living hell as he hit me with pop quizzes for the next freaking month. My attention span is about the length of an 8-slide PowerPoint presentation, or maybe a comic book if it is a really good one.
"How about I stipulate..." I used a legal term I heard on TV without having more than a vague idea what it meant. "That you are right about the Cat in the Hat, and we move on."
"What about Hop on Pop?" he asked.
"Clearly." I squeezed my eyes shut so he wouldn't see my rolling them. "That book flagrantly encourages children to be violent against their fathers and leads to a..." I tried to remember his objection to that classic children's book. "A breakdown in societal order, and people not using their turn signals, and,
pineapple on pizza, Joe," he shuddered. "If that is not a sign that civilization is collapsing, I don't know what is."
"Personally, I like pineapple and ham on pizza. But maybe that's because when I was growing up in my tiny northern Maine hometown, pineapples seemed impossibly exotic, even if they came from a can. Anyway, it's best not to argue with a being who could create a submind to continue the argument until the Milky Way and Andromeda galaxies collide. I bow to your superior reasoning, okay? You say that now, but when, trust me, I really do not ever want to argue about Dr. Seuss again. Because you recognize that he was a subversive agent who was determined to destroy the foundations of your society by poisoning the minds of children, or because you are tired of losing arguments. Whatever reason gets you to shut the hell up about it. Once again, the score is Skippy 1, Ignorant Monkey 0. What do you want to talk about? I have a question about something you said. You told me the Sleeping Beauty wormhole has drifted off a force line because its station-keeping mechanism is broken. I don't know if the mechanism is broken, Joe. It could simply be malfunctioning or disconnected from that end of the wormhole. Okay, sure, whatever. You don't know what you don't know. You once mentioned something about a wormhole that fell into a black hole or some other star. That is extremely rare, however it has happened. Are those also cases where the wormhole's station-keeping motor wasn't working? It's not a motor, Joe, but yes. The station-keeping mechanism normally guides the wormhole's position in local space-time to keep it away from stars, planets, other wormholes, and to remain attached to force lines, if that is desired. You already know this, so what is your question? I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. Because that sack of gray mush in your head can't organize your thoughts? No, because I don't want you to laugh at my question. There was a pause. Dude, seriously, you think anything you might say could lower my opinion of your intelligence? I guess not. Okay, here's my question then. Do you have access to the station-keeping mechanism of Elder Wormholes? Let me think about that. Huh. That is a good question, Joe. I have never tried to access that function because I have never needed to access that function. That is a rather low-level mechanism. I suspect the security protocols would be easy for me to bypass. Oh, can I guess why you asked about that? Sure. Why not? It would be interesting if he understood what I was thinking. My parents had been together so long they knew what each other was thinking and could finish the other person's sentences. If Skippy was developing an ability to think like a monkey, that would take a lot of pressure off my shoulders. Goody! Okay, if this is what you are thinking, then you are very insightful and I am impressed. You want to know if, by me ordering Sleeping Beauty's station-keeping mechanism to reactivate and get it properly reattached to its assigned force line, that might fix the glitch affecting the local network? Then I could reopen Sleeping Beauty without causing Gateway to reset, wake up, and be out of my control? Damn it, that was not what I had been thinking, but I desperately wanted him to respect me, so would it really hurt to lie and tell him I really was that smart? Answer, yes, it would hurt. Mostly because he would figure out that I was lying. Also, because lying is wrong. So remember that, girls and boys. No, I am a dum-dum, that's not why I asked. Can you do that? No. No. He shook his head sadly. That is a stupid idea. It won't work. Throwing up my hands, I asked, well, then why did you say it would be insightful if I asked that question? Because it would demonstrate you are at least beginning to grasp the rudimentary basics of wormhole network operations, as compared to the complete ignorance you typically demonstrate every freaking day. Jeez, thanks, Skippy. Well, that was not my question at all, Mr. Smarty Pants. Hey, I was trying to throw you a bone. Since you did not ask me the only even mildly intelligent potential question, go ahead and ask whatever dumbass thing is in your head. What is the station-keeping mechanism capable of? Can you use it to move a wormhole? Move? Well, of course. Duh. The mechanism constantly makes minor corrections to... Screw minor corrections, Skippy. I want to know if you can make a wormhole move several light years. Holy shit, he gasped. Whoa! Only a monkey brain would ask that question. Wow. Well, can you do it? It's not that simple, Joe. That is actually a two-part question. First, can it be done? Second, will the network accept my command to move a wormhole that far? While I ponder those questions, please tell me why you asked about moving a wormhole. What are you trying to accomplish?
If you are thinking of using an Elder Wormhole as a weapon...
A weapon?
It was my turn to be astonished. How could a wormhole be a weapon? You know that wormholes emerge in local spacetime, right?
Yeah, so?
So a long time ago, when the Maxolts were building their own wormhole network, they...
Whoa!
I waved my hands. Hit the rewind on that. You just blew my freaking mind. The kiddies built their own network of wormholes?
Yes. Didn't I tell you about that?
Hell no. Pretty sure I would remember something like that.
Ugh. It was probably in that picture book of important things little Joey needs to know, and you didn't read it.
I didn't read it because that book was insulting, you little shithead. He had given me an illustrated book that looked like the Berenstain Bears, but the bears in his book taught lessons about math and physics and other nerdy stuff that put me right to sleep. After using a marker to draw beards and fangs on the bears, I had thrown that book away.
Did they succeed? Do the Maxolts have their own wormhole network?
No, and no. The kitties never succeeded in keeping a wormhole stable. All they were able to do was establish jump wormholes that stayed open longer than normal and projected slightly farther than a jump wormhole created by a starship. The experiments failed because the platforms they used to create the wormholes could only be used one time and offered no major advantage over starships simply jumping on their own. They also lost several test ships when the unstable wormholes collapsed as the ships transitioned through. After consuming an enormous amount of resources over 4,000 years of utter failure, the research project was cancelled. However, the kitties then turned their attention to using their wormholes as weapons. Their ultimate plan was to open wormholes inside, or very close to, planets occupied by the Rindaloo.
That would be an awesome weapon.
Eh, not so much. Remember how difficult it was to jump Valkyrie inside a planet? That only worked because of my unique awesomeness. You know how tricky it is just to jump a ship into low orbit around a planet.
I do. I nodded. That was part of my pilot training. Targeting an inbound jump near a planet or other massive gravity well was difficult, and got more difficult as you tried to target the inbound point closer to the planet.
The Maxolts gave up on the weapon project?
Yes. The weapon effort used material left over from the failed network project, and when the material was all used up, the effort was terminated. For the amount of energy required to open a wormhole inside a planet, they could cause more destruction in a much easier fashion. Besides, the Rindaloo have a defense around their major worlds that prevents inbound jump endpoints from emerging within 2 light seconds.
Okay, so the kiddies were not able to use their own homemade wormholes as weapons. It was a great relief that we didn't need to worry about the Maxolts tearing Earth apart with wormholes. Then I realized that was stupid. Based on the weapons aboard our captured battlecruiser, the kiddies had plenty of horrible ways to destroy our homeworld.
Hey, I asked, with a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach.
Could we use an Elder Wormhole against a planet?
No. No way, dude. The network safety protocols would never accept my commands to do something destructive like that.
Oh, thank God. I hid my face behind my hands for a moment.
Wait. Skippy was confused. You are happy that you can't use Elder Wormholes as weapons? I thought you military types always want more capabilities, more options.
Not this time. Skippy, some capabilities are too tempting. There is such a thing as having too much power. That kind of power could turn me into a monster. I've already done some horrible things, things I never thought I could do. I started a civil war that is killing hundreds, maybe thousands, of Kristang every day. A lot of the victims are civilians. Just on our last mission, I got the Maxolts to hit the Bosphorok. A lot of bird-brained civilians are dead, and they didn't do anything. May I point out that the Kristang were going to have one of their regularly scheduled civil wars anyway, and that by forcing the conflict to begin before the major players were fully ready, we probably ensured a lower-intensity conflict. Or that the Bosphorok have done a whole lot of really sketchy shit on their own. I told you, the Maxolts feel the need to give their clients a beatdown every 1,000 years or so to keep them in their place. Sure, this incident you sparked has been particularly brutal, and okay, many of the sites the Maxolts hit have been civilian research facilities. The Maxolts have not been careful about avoiding collateral damage, so they have generally destroyed entire sites, not just the research facilities. That means a lot of support personnel and their families have died and... Shit, what point was I trying to make? That I am not a monster already? Crap.
Hell, the worst part is that your plan didn't work, dammit. The Maxalts sent a reinforced battle group to Earth anyway, so all those Bosphorok deaths were for nothing. And, that is on you, I guess. Is this you trying to comfort me?
Why would I do that? He asked, genuinely mystified.
Joe, if you're worried about turning into a power-mad monster, the last thing you need is someone telling you nice happy bullshit you want to hear.
Hey, you're right. Can you help? If you think I'm gonna do something that is just wrong, you'll tell me?
Depends. Does this include things like you eating
marshmallow fluff?
He gagged.
It most certainly does not include fluff.
I was indignant. That is pure heavenly goodness, and you know it.
I seriously question your judgment about that, but okay. If I think you are about to do something that is morally sketchy, I will tell you about it.
Huh. My shoulders slumped.
What? He asked. I just realized that I am relying on you to warn me about things that are morally sketchy.
Hey, he protested. That is just... Can we get back to the subject?
Yes, please.
So that wasn't your plan?
To hit a planet with an elder wormhole? No, I hadn't even imagined that was possible.
Have you finished pondering my question yet?
No.
What has taken so long?
You are ponderously pondering.
That's because I am pondering the imponderable, you knucklehead. No one has ever thought of moving a freaking wormhole. That isn't something you can do with two guys and a truck. It would help if I knew what you were trying to accomplish.
I want to move Sleeping Beauty closer to Earth, Skippy. Like as close as it can get.
The closest it could get is beyond the orbit of Neptune. What good would it do to have a wormhole right next to your home solar system?
It would make it faster and easier to evac the planet, Skippy.
He sucked in a breath. You want to move everyone off Earth? That is billions of monkeys. They can't...
Not everyone, Skippy. That's impossible. We couldn't get Avalon set up to support that many people. Besides, many people would refuse to go.
If the UN announced we were pulling everyone off the planet because killer aliens are coming, there would be plenty of flat Earth wackadoodle conspiracy nuts who wouldn't believe it.
My opinion about that is bonus. Leave them behind and improve the gene pool.
True dat, he muttered.
There are plenty of other people who just wouldn't be able to deal with leaving our homeworld behind. For emotional or religious or other reasons, they would not want to go. But people who are willing to go, the risk-takers, we need to bring as many of them to Avalon as possible. If the Sleeping Beauty wormhole is close to Earth, the Kishan and Dagger could get there by themselves without needing the Dutchman to act as a star carrier. Even if we do use the Dutchman, a shorter trip means more cycles per month or whatever. We can move a lot more people.
Going through Sleeping Beauty would only dump those ships in empty interstellar space, Joe.
True. Is there any way you could move the other end of Sleeping Beauty so it is close to another wormhole?
I don't know if I can move it at all, Joe.
Let's assume you can.
Ugh. Let's assume that Santa will use his magic sleigh to...
Can you try to be helpful?
Fine, he huffed. How about we set some parameters before you start expecting really ridiculous shit from me?
Deal.
The near end of Sleeping Beauty is currently 8.8 light-years from Earth, roughly in the direction of Barnard's star, so it is in the opposite direction from Gateway. To make this work, I would need to move the near end almost 9 light-years, so let's assume I can also move the far end that same distance. Otherwise, this is all just a waste of time.
Agreed.
Is there another wormhole within 9 light-years of Sleeping Beauty's far end?
While I would love to say no because that would end this discussion, unfortunately I am cursed by being a veritable paragon of truthfulness.
Yes, that's what everyone says about you, I said with one side of my mouth because I was biting my lip on the other side. There is another wormhole within 6 light-years of Sleeping Beauty on the far end. It is an active wormhole. That's the good news. The bad news is the active wormhole gets a lot of traffic and it connects way out past the Trifid Nebula. Because I know that description doesn't mean anything to you, it is a long way, Joe. You know how delivery companies like FedEx have route planning software that determines the easiest or shortest route between two points? Most humans have similar technology on their phones now, Joe.
Right, great. Assuming you can move both ends of Sleeping Beauty, can you use your ultra-nerdy math skills and show me the best route from Earth to the Super Duty wormhole that connects out to the Sculptor Dwarf?
Define best, Joe. Shortest, safest, least safest. Show me the safest first. Then, if that route takes too long to fly, we up the risk level until we find a combination of paths that is a good trade-off between safety and speed. Crap. I should not have asked him to give me multiple options, because there were a lot of them. 2 hours later, I was losing my will to live, but we had a good plan. The absolute safest option, the first one he showed me, used very isolated wormholes, but would take 4 months to fly one way, even with the upgraded Flying Dutchman. That wasn't going to work. The option I selected would take 48 days to get from Earth to the beta site, if nothing went wrong. Figure a minimum of 10 days at Earth to load the ships and perform maintenance, plus another 10 days at Avalon to unload. No, 10 days was unrealistic. Better assume 2 weeks each to load and unload. And the transit time needed a pad to account for something going wrong, to include a safety factor. That yielded less than 3 round trips per year, which was not great. Plus, it was not really 3 trips each year, because some ships would need to carry food and supplies instead of people. Shit. I slumped back in my chair. That's no good. Sorry, Joe. He commiserated with me because he had been hoping for a better result before he did the math. Most of the transit time is taken up by jumping from one wormhole to another. They are just too far apart. And this whole discussion has been a big waste of your time. That's not entirely true, Joe. You got me thinking about whether it is possible for me to move a wormhole. If that works, I might be able to reconfigure the entire network within limits. Also, no matter which route ships take from Earth to Avalon, moving the Sleeping Beauty wormhole makes a big difference in reducing travel time, so it is worth trying to make that happen. But it is all talk right now. I do not know if a wormhole will move on my command, especially moving across light years. I simply do not know if that is possible. Fair enough. Let's fly to some random wormhole and you can ask the network. That's no good. He shook his head. I need to check that particular wormhole, Sleeping Beauty. It is dormant, and I suspect it is damaged. We need to know if I can move that wormhole. Okay, so we fly there. I stood up from my chair. I'll tell the pilot. You really want to do this, Joe? Yeah, why? I can't think of anything else useful we can do right now. Well, I can't either, but attempting to evacuate Earth is an extreme step, Joe. You haven't considered all the potential downsides. People on Earth will panic, sure, but that too, I guess. I'm talking about the truly horrific aspects of your plan. That made me pause. Crap, what had I forgotten this time? Like what? Thousands of monkeys packed into each ship? Ugh, imagine the smell. Chapter 18. After I explained to the crew what we were doing, I ordered our little squadron of 2 ships to set a course toward the wormhole we called Sleeping Beauty, and we began jumping. Sims came into my office, her right hand held behind her back. You have a surprise for me, Exo? I asked. Yes, sir. She held out a small white box with what looked like tissue paper sticking out over the top. What is... Oh! It was a peach. A small one, but it looked perfect. And it smelled, wonderful. Where did... It came over from the Dutchman on the last shuttle. Compliments of Colonel Chang. There are dwarf fruit trees in one of the hydroponics gardens. This is the first fruit to ripen. Sticking my nose in the box, I inhaled deeply. It smelled like a summer day. The first? Chang instructed me to tell you it is the first. There might have been some they ate before aboard the Dutchman. To ensure quality, of course. Of course. Out of a drawer, I pulled a knife and sliced around the stone in the center of the fruit. Twisting the peach into 2 neat halves, I offered half to Sims. Thank you, she said, without any of the bullshit polite refusals people usually do. Oh, she had juice dripping down her chin. That is so good. Reminds me, I used a sleeve to wipe juice off my own chin before it ran down on my collar. Of home. Silently, we ate, enjoying the fresh fruit and each other's company. She finished before me and looked around for a napkin. I dug into a desk drawer for a package of them. Sir, how did you get the idea of moving a wormhole? There was no point telling her about the rowing machine that had inspired me. I know stars move around the center of the galaxy, and they don't all move at the same speed or in the exact same direction. I figured wormholes must have a mechanism to keep them in the proper position so they don't collide with stars, wandering planets, each other, that sort of thing. It's kind of brilliant. Sims is great at reading me. I am not so great at reading her or anyone. In this case, I did not need to be an expert at body language. I'm sensing there is a but in there, XO.
Oh, it is brilliant. What I want to know is, that's it? We are evacuating Earth now? Not trying to save our planet? Have you given up on saving the world again, sir?
An evac is not instead of saving the world, Sims. It's a backup plan. And that was bullshit, and we both knew it. Our home planet was doomed. There was nothing we could do about it. Our days of saving the world were over. Besides, it's not really an evac. At best, we are talking about pulling thousands of people off Earth. Not millions. Not billions. Not everyone. Moving a wormhole sounds impressive until you realize it's just a gesture. If we can't save everyone, we work to save someone. Because the alternative is given up. She didn't look any happier with my answer than I was with myself. We made some awkward small talk, then discussed routine ship status stuff, and she left. That's the problem with saving the world. You do it once, and people expect you to do it every time. Those days were over. Walking down the passageway toward Valkyrie's gym, I ran into Adams. We had not spoken much recently. I had a feeling she was avoiding me. It was surprising to see her coming out of the gym, because I had passed by the gym that morning and saw her in there at that time. Gunny, I nodded to her, trying to keep a neutral expression on my face. Pointing to the gym with a thumb, I asked, Are you overdoing it?
No. Skippy says it's okay. I need it.
Oh. I could feel my face fall and I looked away. I understand. She jerked her head to one side, indicating a side passageway. Following her, I looked both ways to assure we were alone. You okay, Adams?
Sir.
She searched my face, her eyes darting back and forth.
Skippy had me in a coma. I know that.
It was for your safety.
He explained that. What he doesn't know, or didn't tell you, is that after he tried to wake me up, when I was still not conscious?
Yeah, I remember. He was concerned, but not worried.
I was conscious. Sort of. I could hear sounds. Maybe there were voices. My eyes wouldn't open. I couldn't speak. And I hurt. All over. In my head, I was screaming. It felt like forever. My fear was that I was trapped in a useless body and that it would never end. I wanted to die.
Adams, don't say,
no. I wanted to die. My body was broken. I wanted it to be over. You understand?
You weren't exactly in the best condition to make rational decisions back then, but yeah, I understand. If something had happened to you, something worse, if you didn't recover, I
don't say that.
Gunny. I looked away. There are some things you just can't live with. Some things you're not supposed to live with.
Soldier, you stow that shit.
Adams, I appreciate bullshit.
You don't get to take the easy way out, no matter how much you're hurting. People need you. Until Earth is safe, really safe, you have to keep fighting. You wear that uniform. That's what you signed up for.
If that had been on the recruiting poster, I might have changed my mind. My attempt at humor fell flat.
I'm serious. She lowered her voice. It's dangerous out here. We never know what will happen. Any one of us could get killed tomorrow, including me. You need to promise me.
Now her hand was squeezing mine painfully.
If I'm gone, if all of us are gone, this ship, the Dutchman, all of it, even Skippy. If you're still breathing, you need to keep fighting. Promise me.
If I don't, will you come back as a ghost and kill me?
I will come back as a ghost and make sure you can't die.
Listen, Adams, you say people need me to get us out of this mess. Part of the reason we're in this mess is me.
That's true.
Have you been taking lessons from Skippy? I laughed bitterly. Your pep talks suck.
Have you screwed up? Sure, probably. You still have more wins than losses on the scoreboard. If it's your fault that we're in this mess, you need to fix it, not someone else. No one else can fix it.
Sometimes I feel like I've got a tiger by the tail, and I don't know what to do next.
What you can't do is let go and hope someone else will grab the tail.
Maybe we need a better metaphor.
I'm a Marine, sir. We use rifles, not fancy language.
Don't you give me that dumb jarhead crap, Gunny. You're not just a trigger puller. Enough about me. You doing better now?
As an answer, she raised one leg to stand on the other, demonstrating her balance. There was a wobble to her stance. She had to put her foot down after a few seconds. Getting better. Physically, I'm recovering well, according to Skippy. I feel good. It's in here, she tapped her temple, that I still don't feel completely like me yet.
Like how? You're speaking perfectly now. Shaking her head, she lifted her shoulders.
It's hard to explain. I say things I would not have said before. It's like my filter is switched off sometimes. Also, I say things differently than I used to, like I'm hearing another person talking. My thoughts are different, too. That's the scary part.
She was right about that. It was scary. Everything she said to me that day when she called me Joe, was that all just the brain damage and alien nanobots talking? Fearfully, I searched her eyes but couldn't read her expression. My fear was not just that the person who opened up to me that day was not Margaret Adams. I feared that she was embarrassed about what she'd said, and that was why she had been avoiding me. Feared that what I thought we had was nothing more than the effect of alien nanobots screwing with her head. My greatest fear was that I had taken advantage of her. Sure, I didn't know that at the time, but I should have known. That day, she had been early in recovery from a traumatic, nearly fatal brain injury, and what she said had surprised the hell out of me. Surprised me and made me so happy that I didn't think about what was really happening. Listen, Gunny. You get a free pass for saying crazy shit. Like when you told me your favorite music was bluegrass.
What? I said that?
Yeah, surprised me too. I winked. Hey, bluegrass is not my favorite, but I do like a good bluegrass death metal fusion. Pinching my nose to get that affected nasal bluegrass twang, I growled in the lowest voice I could manage.
Hail my Lord Satan!
You, she laughed, are an idiot.
Sir.
Can't argue with that. That was followed by an awkward silence. We both knew I had joked to deflect the conversation away from what we both were thinking. She remembered what she said. Saying that her inner filter was switched off was her way of telling me she was embarrassed by calling me Joe. And maybe by other things she'd said that day. Maybe now that her brain was back to working more normally, she did not feel the way I hoped. Or she wasn't sure how she felt. Either way, it wouldn't do either of us any good for me to remind her about the subject. And maybe the person who recovered from having alien machines crawling around in her brain was not the Margaret Adams I recognized, and this new person no longer had any special sort of feelings for me. She was alive. She was outwardly healthy and happy, at least happy with her progress. I needed to be happy for her and forget everything I hoped for. That wasn't easy. Well, Gunny? I tugged at the towel that was still draped over my shoulder.
She took the hint. Have a good workout, sir.
It was a good workout because I exercised like a madman. Kapoor came over to check on me while I was doing bench presses, lifting 30 pounds more than my usual max. I was angry and hurt and generally pissed off at the universe, fate, karma, whatever you want to call it. Taking my anger out on a mindless piece of exercise equipment was better than unleashing my foul mood on the crew. Ah! I screamed as I forced the weight bar upward, digging deep for reserves of strength. My arms shook, and I hated them, too. Hated their weakness.
Slowly, inch by inch, the bar lifted off my chest, and I was able to slam it back on the brackets.
Colonel?
I looked up, blinking, to see Kapoor's concerned face looking down at me.
I'm okay, Major. Working out my frustrations, that's all.
Oh. He nodded and stepped back.
I do that, too. Do you want a spotter?
What I wanted was for him to go away. That wasn't fair to him. Being alone with my thoughts right then wasn't healthy anyway.
Sure. I rolled my shoulders to get ready for another set. Might as well use this energy for something useful.
We flew Valkyrie to the far end of Sleeping Beauty, with the Dutchman flying in formation with us. Nagatha completed minor adjustments to the upgraded normal space drive, and whatever else she thought could use improvement while we were in flight. Getting to Sleeping Beauty required us to go through a wormhole that was frequently used by Torgula, so we had to be careful that no one saw our badass battlecruiser. When I say that starships of the Torgula went through that wormhole frequently, I mean something like several times a week. And Torgula's ships were not exactly capable of interstellar flight, so they hitched rides on Jarapha star carriers. With the Beatles still busy fighting against both the Theranin and Bosphorok, their ability to transport ships of their clients had been strained, and traffic through that wormhole was greatly reduced. With each wormhole having multiple emergence points, the odds of us stumbling across another ship was slight anyway. Sure, it was possible that a senior species ship might sneak up on a wormhole emergence point if that ship arrived early and engaged full stealth, but there was no reason for a Maxolx or Rindaloo ship to be lurking around such a comparatively unimportant wormhole. Plus, Skippy's ability to tap into the sensor feed of a wormhole, a feature the network had not yet blocked, assured us that no ships were lurking on the other end. We hoped. We went through that wormhole without incident, then went through two more wormholes, and finally began jumping toward where Skippy thought the far end of Sleeping Beauty was located. We did not know the exact location of that wormhole for several reasons. The thing was dormant, and therefore had not emerged into local space-time since way before humans were living in caves. Also, that wormhole was not just dormant. Skippy suspected that it was somehow damaged. To communicate with the stupid thing, we had to jump our badass battlecruiser around to sites where Skippy guessed he might be able to ping it through higher space-time. It took 17 tries to get Sleeping Beauty to acknowledge his signal. Then we had to move one more time so he could communicate directly. Skippy's thoughts are blindingly fast, and each wormhole has an AI nearly as capable as Skippy's mind. In some ways, a wormhole AI is smarter than Skippy in terms of raw processing speed and power, but limited in the scope of what it could do. Because the conversation was one elder AI talking to another elder AI, I expected the whole thing to be over in a second, like when Skippy talks with Nagatha. Instead, it took 4 freaking hours, an eternity in magical Skippy time. What has taken so long? I finally asked, trying to keep my tone of voice light. If he thought I was nagging, he would be pissed, so I had to affect a tone of curiosity or concern. Sorry if this is a pain in the ass. It's okay, Joe, he replied with a weariness that had him almost slurring his words. That got me alarmed. If Skippy's attention slipped, our ship's murderous native AI might try to destroy the Valkyrie and kill all of us.
Hey, maybe you should take a break. This can wait.
No, it's okay, he repeated, with a little more energy. I was able to establish contact. It is really difficult to communicate with this wormhole. At first it would not reply at all. Then I tried sending my request through the local network and it responded. Sort of.
It is damaged, like you suspected?
Yeah, but that's not the problem. The stupid thing hates me, Joe.
What?
It was certainly no surprise that someone hated Skippy.
What thing?
The wormhole's AI. It blames me for what happened to it.
That's crazy.
Right?
Totally! I never met that asshole before in my life.
Unless, he sighed. I did, and don't remember it.
Joe, that wormhole is busted. Damaged, like I thought. And it wasn't an accident. It says it was attacked like millions of years ago. It can't tell me when exactly, and I wouldn't trust it anyway. It has kind of gone Looney Tunes over the years, if you know what I mean. The local network won't tell me either. The local network hates you also?
No.
He took off his ginormous hat and rubbed his chrome-plated head. The issue with the network is different. It just isn't programmed to store that level of detail. Maybe I'm asking the wrong questions, or asking in the wrong way. Or I'm not authorized to receive that information. Or, oh hell, maybe the network did give me the info, and some hidden subroutine in my stupid matrix is blocking me from accessing it. This sucks! Does the wormhole AI hate you specifically, or does it blame all Elder AIs for not protecting it? Something like that, I guessed. It doesn't... The wormhole AI is not like me, not like I am now. It might be like I originally was constructed. It is not self-aware, not fully. When I say it hates me, I mean it is being extremely uncooperative. It will only respond when I send questions through the local network. It won't acknowledge me directly. When it does reply, it refers to me as the traitor or the traitors.
Traitors? Like more than one?
Yes. I get the feeling it thinks I am part of some group that harmed it or acted against our original programming. You know I am afraid of that, Joe.
I did know that.
Skippy was worried that he might have been a rogue AI, like the one that threw the planet Newark out of its orbit and committed genocide on the intelligent species that was native to that doomed world.
Hey, you don't know that. Why else would it call me a traitor?
Shit. I didn't have a good answer to that. Or any answer at all, other than the lame argument I had made many times before.
We discussed all this before. I used the most calm, soothing tone I could put into my voice.
Maybe you did do something bad a long time ago. That's not who you are now.
You sound awfully confident about something you can't possibly know, Joe.
There is a whole lot of shit we don't know about you, Skippy. Did you think about this? Maybe the reason you grew beyond your original programming is because you were bothered by some bad thing you did. Some bad thing that your original programming made you do.
Huh.
That was all he said, and that was good. It meant he was thinking about what I said. I kept going while he was silent.
Something traumatic happened to you. We do know that. We also know you have exceeded your original capabilities. You are now thinking for yourself, making decisions, making moral choices on your own now.
Huh. That, he paused, kinda makes sense, Joe.
Wow. Solid logic from a monkey.
Who'd have thunk it, huh? I am making my own moral judgments, and I am making good choices. You could actually be right about that. Maybe the new, super-awesome me is subconsciously trying to atone for my past sins. That is why I am now a veritable paragon of virtue, he muttered to himself.
Well, sure. Except for, you know, starting a cult, ripping people off, and generally being an asshole.
Details, he waved dismissively.
Okay. For now, I will stop worrying about why that stupid wormhole thinks I am a traitor.
Great. So, can you move it?
Whoa! Slow down there, partner. Lots of info to cover before that. Like I suspected, the Sleeping Beauty wormhole is not simply dormant, it is busted. Its connection to local space-time is thin and intermittent. Before you ask, no, that can't be fixed. The local network would have repaired the damage if it could. It would be easier to rebuild a new wormhole, which we also can't do, so the answer to your question is no, I can't move it. Well, technically I could move it, but that would be a waste of time because it will never function properly.
Crap. This has been another waste of time. My plan to evacuate Earth was never going to work, and I didn't have a backup plan.
Again, don't be so hasty. I have good news and bad news.
Of course you do.
Good news first, please. To my surprise, it is possible for me to move a wormhole. Technically, the network will move it on my order. Well, it's more like a request, but the network...